There are so many great stories to uncover in the early history of California, and some of the most interesting ones are those that come from women. I'm Damian Bassage. Welcome to California Frontier. Now, oftentimes when you delve into the history books or the early documents, many of them tend to focus on important political events, battles, things that the writers felt would get a point across about their particular side in a dispute or in a political conflict, etc. And so oftentimes when we read these testimonies, that's what we tend to hear about, right? But the cool thing about reading the testimonies of women oftentimes is that you get a glimpse into daily life. What was life like on a day-to-day basis on the frontier, on an area that was in conflict, or during a time of transition? You know, what were people doing on a day-to-day basis? And that's where conversations or memoirs or testimonies from women really play a great role. And fortunately, some of the women of early California left behind their stories that can give us important glimpses into these day-to-day lives. Now, the three women I'm going to talk about today all lived in San Diego, but their lives took very different paths, as you'll hear. Each has a different story, but all have in common the fact that they lived through the upheavals that changed California forever in the mid-19th century. Now, the testimonies that I'm going to talk about here are drawn from the book Testimonios, Early California Through the Eyes of Women, 1815 to 1848, by Rosemarie Beebe and Robert Sankiewicz. And Rosemarie and Robert, you probably, if you've listened to the podcast before, we've talked about them. They have done such a great job of translating and editing so many of these important stories from early California. So I recommend that you get the book. It's linked in the description here in this episode. You'll be able to find it. I really recommend it. The first woman I'm going to talk about is Josefa Carrillo de Fitch. She was born in San Diego in 1810, and her parents actually named her Maria Antonia Natalia Lija Carrillo. But Josefa was her nickname, and that's who she was known as. Now, Josefa's father, Joaquin Carrillo, was a soldier from Baja California, and her mother, Maria Ignacia Lopez, was the daughter of a soldier. And she was also the daughter of a woman who had come to California with the expedition led by Juan Bautista de Anza in 1776. Maria's mother, whose name was Maria Feliciana Arbaidio, was known for having created a stir during the journey, during the Anza expedition, by singing songs that the expedition's chaplain, Father Pedro Font, considered inappropriate. Now, this caused a conflict between the priest, Father Font, and Colonel Anza, who was leading the expedition. And Colonel Anza did not want to cause problems by punishing Maria for her behavior, and evidently he wasn't particularly bothered by the songs she was singing around the campfire. But nevertheless, you can guess that from her grandmother, Josefa inherited a penchant for making waves. In 1829, she was engaged to marry Henry Fitch, an American sea captain who had settled in Alta California. But the governor of Alta California, the Mexican governor, Jose Maria de Echandea, was opposed to the wedding. According to Josefa, the governor was in love with her, and he wanted to marry her. And so he wanted to get the wedding called off so that perhaps he could marry Josefa. Whether that was true or not, Josefa and Henry boarded a ship to Chile where they were married. Basically, they eloped. When the couple returned months later to San Diego, the situation, however, was still tense. In her testimony, Josefa claimed that the elopement angered her father so much that he vowed to kill her. But when she came back, she was soon reconciled with her father, who evidently was waiting with a shotgun. But when he saw her, he broke down in tears and couldn't imagine harming his beloved daughter. So what did he do? He organized a grand ball in honor of the couple. Josefa and Captain Fitch had 11 children, and they opened a store in Old Town San Diego, what is today known as Old Town San Diego. Captain Fitch died in 1849, but nonetheless, Josefa continued to run the store, but eventually decided to leave San Diego. In 1850, she moved to Northern California, to the area near Sonoma. There, she lived on a rancho called Rancho Satiomi, which was part of a land grant that was given to her husband in 1841. In 1875, Josefa gave an interview to Henry Cerruti, who was a biographer working for historian Hubert Howe Bancroft. Now, Cerruti was quite a character, an Italian who had been down in South America and picked up Spanish there, and sort of an all-around adventurer. And he was responsible for taking some of these testimonies for this multi-volume history of California that Bancroft was organizing. And he wanted to get the memories of people who lived through the Spanish and Mexican eras. During the interview, Josefa provided information, and this is kind of interesting, about the meaning of some California place names, including California itself. According to Josefa, her mother had told her it was a Native American word meaning high hill. She also told the story of her elopement with Henry, and she took the opportunity to criticize how the Americans had gone around renaming places in California. Squatters, unfortunately, as the case was with many Mexican Californian landowners, had overrun her rancho. And so Josefa spent much time and money trying to defend the title to the land. She eventually had to submit to a series of forced land auctions in order to pay her legal costs. And this, once again, was part of the story of many families who, even though they may have won or proven the title to their land, had spent so much money paying for lawyers that they wound up having to sell it in order to pay their debts. So she had to go through a series of land auctions, and at one such auction, a man named Harmon Heald bought 100 acres and turned it into the town of Healdsburg, where Josefa lived until she died in 1893. Now, the next woman I'm going to talk about is Juana Machado, or Juana Machado de Writington, as she was known later. Juana was born in 1814 in San Diego. Her father, José Manuel Machado, was a soldier at the San Diego Presidio, and her mother, Maria Serafina Valdez, was from the Pueblo of Los Angeles. Both her mother's and her father's parents had come to Los Angeles as part of the Ribera expedition that brought families to settle in the area in 1781. So the Ribera expedition was when a group of families came to the southern part of California, led by Fernando de Rivera y Moncada, and they established the Pueblo of Los Angeles. In 1829, Juana married a soldier, Damaso Alipas. She was 15 years old at the time. Together, the couple had three children. Unfortunately, Damaso was killed in 1835, and Juana became a widow at a fairly young age. She was approximately 20 years old when she became a widow. Just a few years later, she also met an American, Thomas Writington, who had come to San Diego as a sailor. Juana and Thomas married and eventually had three children of their own. In 1877, Juana gave an interview to Thomas Savage, another biographer who was working for Hubert Howe Bancroft. In her testimony, Juana provided important historical information about the Californios' involvement in the Mexican-American War, Indian uprisings, and life as a child of a soldier. Juana recounted what it was like to be part of a soldier's family when California became part of Mexico. That is, after the independence of Mexico, when the territory broke off from Spain and it became, you know, part of Mexico rather than New Spain as it had been known before that. A very interesting and sort of poignant moment happened when the new regime ordered the Presidio soldiers to cut off the long braid they wore. So one of the interesting features of Spanish frontier soldiers in California was in their apparel, let's say, their uniforms, was that they wore a long braid that would stretch all the way down their back. And so they were ordered to cut it off. And Juana is quoted as saying, "At the tip of the braid, there would be a ribbon or silk knot. On many men, the braid went past their waist. It was quite similar to the way Chinese wore their hair. I remember when my father arrived home with his braid in his hand. His face showed such sorrow. My mother's face was not any better. She would look at the braid and cry." Later, Juana lived through the U.S. annexation of Alta California. And due to her mother's appeal to U.S. Naval Commodore Stockton, Juana's brother received a safe conduct pass by U.S. forces. He later served as a guide for the military, but did not participate in the fighting. And this kind of shows the ambiguity that a number of the Mexican Californians or Californios felt toward the U.S. invasion and annexation. While they were proud of their homeland, at the same time, they were a little bit ambivalent as to whether this was going to be a good thing or a bad thing. Some fought valiantly against U.S. forces. Others sort of hunkered down. Others tended to acquiesce. And so like in a situation like this, where you have a military-aged male who probably wasn't ready to go and fight the U.S. soldiers, he agrees to serve as a guide, but at the same time, he doesn't participate in any action that would harm his fellow Mexican Californians. Juana was widowed again in 1853 when her husband Thomas was killed after a fall from a horse. For decades, Juana's house in Old Town San Diego remained an important center for public life. Juana died near San Diego in 1901. And the third woman in this trio is a woman named Apolinaria Lorenzana. And she also was from San Diego or lived in San Diego, but her story was a little bit different. Juana Machado actually mentioned her in her testimony. And Apolinaria was well known and loved among the people of San Diego, both the Hispanic gente de razón, as they were known, and the Native Americans. Although she never married, Apolinaria was godmother to numerous children, both Californios and indigenous. She arrived in California in 1800, so she was born in Mexico City. And she came with a group of orphans from Mexico City aboard a frigate named the Concepción. Because the children at the orphanage had no families of their own, they were children whose parents had left them in the care of the orphanage, they all received the surname, the last name, Lorenzana, after the bishop who founded the orphanage. So all of the children in this orphanage had the last name Lorenzana, no matter where they came from. And a whole group of them came to Alta California in 1800. At the time of her arrival, Apolinaria was approximately 7 years old. She was soon placed in the household of Don Raimundo Carrillo, the commander of the San Diego Presidio, where she stayed as a child. Later, she worked at Mission San Diego for many years, and she was involved in numerous aspects of mission life. Apolinaria had learned to read while growing up at the orphanage in Mexico City, but later she had to teach herself to write. She said in her testimony, "When I was older and already in California, I taught myself how to write. Using whatever books I could find, I would copy the letters onto any sort of paper I could obtain, such as empty cigarette papers or a blank piece of paper that somebody had thrown out." She became well known as a teacher, and many young girls learned to read and write thanks to Apolinaria. Thomas Savage interviewed Apolinaria in 1878. Her testimony is fascinating, and it provides many details about life in Southern California during the Spanish and Mexican eras, including the workings of daily life at Mission San Diego de Alcalá. In her testimony, Apolinaria described the violence that often took place between Native Americans and Californios in the 1830s. A particularly harrowing account, which she tells, is the story of an attack by Native Americans on Rancho Jamul, which is outside of San Diego, in 1836. And she also talks about the violent revenge that some Californios took against Native people as a result. Apolinaria was also a landowner, and she eventually had three ranchos near San Diego: Rancho Jamacha, Rancho San Juan de las Sequas, and Rancho Cañada de los Coches. All of those ranchos had been originally part of Mission San Diego de Alcalá. In her interview, Apolinaria described what she would do when she acquired a new piece of land. "Whenever I acquired land, I had it blessed and named in honor of a saint. I've always had faith in the power of the saints, and above all, faith in the one who surpasses them all, God himself." Apolinaria was known as a woman of faith, and that was part of her fame, her reputation among the people that she was with. And she considered service to others as a hallmark of that faith. During her interview with Thomas Savage, she reflected on her life in service to others. Quote, "I had the satisfaction of being well-loved by young and old and rich and poor. Maybe it was because I was good-natured and would do whatever I could to help people." Apolinaria died in 1884. At that time, she had lost all of her land holdings and lived on the charity of others. As I mentioned before, you can read the complete testimonies of Apolinaria Lorenzana, Juana Machado, and Josefa Carrillo, along with many others, in the book Testimonios, Early California Through the Eyes of Women, 1815 to 1848. This is the California Frontier Show. If you would like to know more about the California Frontier Project, visit californiafrontier.net. If you would like to support the show, scroll down in the show notes and click Support the Show. Then be sure to tell all your friends about the podcast. If you would like to connect with me, the host, send me an email at damian@californiafrontier.net.